Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
Welcome, everyone, to Redacted on this Thursday. I'm Clayton Morris.
I'm Natalie Morris.
And on this show, we cover the stories the mainstream media largely ignores. They are absolutely ignoring the Julian Assange story. Why? Why are they being so quiet? Some major movements right now in a case that could actually perhaps bring Julian Assange out of prison, maybe after an extradition to the United States. It could change everything. We're going to tell you about this case and what it means for the future of the CIA and Julian Assange.
Plus, the massive defense budget in the United States did pass the House and the Senate. It now heads to the president's desk. He will certainly sign it. If there is no other indication of the expanding military complex, I don't know what is. It's massive. We're going to take a look at that.
We're also going to look at new round of civilian attacks inside of Donetsk, of course, which was formerly eastern Ukraine. Why is Ukraine, who's completely run out of money and weapons and now is literally has soldiers that are 70 years old being captured and children as young as 13 being captured on the battlefield? Why are they launching HIMARS attacks into civilian areas in Donetsk? These are not military targets, but Patrick Lancaster is there. He's at the hospital, and we're going to look at some of these latest round of civilian casualties that are happening right now as we speak.
Plus, we're going to take a look at new rules that allow plus-size passengers an entire row for the price of one seat. Do you think that's fair? Do you think that's good for us? We're going to debate that, all that and more coming up here on Redacted as we start right now.
Welcome to Redacted on this Thursday. So glad to have all of you here. We've got a very busy show for you. And, you know, among the big stories we've been watching, of course, this afternoon is President Putin giving a multi-hour press conference. Imagine President Biden doing an over 3-hour press conference where he took questions from you just wouldn't believe the amount of questions this guy just took. He took questions from all over the Russian Federation, from random individuals at universities, from reporters about the war, about de-dollarization.
He took a question, shockingly, from the New York Times, which my jaw about hit the floor because we're told that they only answer questions to friendly media and no opposition media. So what is the New York Times doing there being invited? She actually said, thank you so much for having me. And he said, it never was me, actually, that didn't want you here. I'm always willing to answer Democratic questions.
Yeah. So kind of crazy. I mean, talking about de-dollarization and the amount of dollars they're now using for transactions has plummeted. It used to be at 87% for using U.S. dollars to settle transactions. And he said it's the West's fault. Literally under sanctions, we now are down to about 20% using the dollar. This is the decline of the U.S. dollar. Also talking about how they will absolutely move for demilitarization of Ukraine. That country will be demilitarized, in his words. And he called Ukrainians a bunch of freeloaders right now, that they're literally importing everything they're using. Their manufacturing has been totally destroyed. Everything that's coming in is being basically given to them for free by NATO and the United States and the West, and it's all being shipped in there with no capacity for repayment. So really eye-opening.
We're going to continue to look at it over the weekend, and we'll bring you more of a deep dive on that. as well.
But first, we've got our newsletter. We should tell you all about it. Please subscribe. We, again, last night had a record number of you sign up for the newsletter. So thank you guys so much. It's totally free. You don't have to pay anything. It's our way to stay connected with you. And it's the best way to start your morning over your cup of coffee. Just go to redacted.inc, sign up. Again, it's totally free. We don't sell your email or anything like that. All you get is the newsletter. You get a great newsletter delivered to your inbox first thing in the morning. You can read it over your cup of coffee. It takes about 5 to 10 minutes. We cover about 4 or 5 of the big stories of the day, and it's a great way to start your morning. Again, just go to redacted.inc, and you'll receive a welcome email from me, which is clayton@redacted.inc, and then just drag it over to your inbox, because sometimes it might wind up in your spam folder or your junk folder or something like that. And then tomorrow morning, or the first, you know, we do it Monday through Thursday, so on Monday morning, you'll get the newsletter at about 7 a.m. Eastern time. Once again, go to redacted.inc. While WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange sits in a London prison for the crime of committing journalism, 4 Americans are suing the CIA and Mike Pompeo, 2 lawyers and 2 American journalists, for spying on them when they met with Assange at the Ecuadorian embassy. There are growing signs this morning that this case will not be dismissed, that the judge in New York is going to allow this to move forward. This could be groundbreaking. This could be the major positive step, perhaps, in getting Assange released from prison, perhaps a catalyst, if you will. Kevin Gostola is an excellent journalist who knows more about this, more about the Assange case than perhaps anyone. In fact, I believe he's the only one that's really been covering this New York case, which is unbelievable to me. You think all of the major media would be covering this story. Of course, they're quiet on this story. He's also the author of the book Guilty of Journalism, The Political Case Against Julian Assange. And Kevin joins us now. Kevin, great to see you, and thanks for your journalism.
Good to speak with you.
So this, am I putting too much on this case? I'm saying that I believe this is a big catalyst which could lead to major things happening in the Assange case. Can you walk us through it? Am I making too much of this, or is this a big deal, what this judge in New York looks like he might do here?
Well, first, I just want to emphasize that the core liberty that is being argued over in this case, when you travel abroad, does the U.S. government lose, or do you lose as an American, or do I lose as an American, the privacy rights that I have under the Constitution in the United States? Meaning, now that I've left the borders of the United States, can a government agency, intelligence, national security, or any government institution choose to violate those privacy rights? And particularly when I'm in other buildings that perhaps the US doesn't have full control over, and yet there are surveillance systems or other mechanisms for security that exist, which they could obtain information, video, audio, whatever, and maybe use them to investigate me. Do I lose my right to privacy because I've left the US? That's central to this, because we have 4 individuals, 2 journalists, 2 attorneys that met Julian Assange in the Ecuador embassy in London. There's evidence that people like them were singled out as priority targets by a private contractor named UC Global, run by David Morales. And David Morales is known to have gone to Las Vegas Sands, potentially, allegedly in the lawsuit, inked some kind of a behind-the-scenes agreement that allowed the CIA to allegedly outsource a spying operation to him, with somehow Sheldon Adelson being involved. Of course, he's now dead, does not exist anymore. But the allegations in this is that these individuals who tried to visit Julian Assange were targeted simply because they were there talking to Julian Assange. And there was some interest on the part of the CIA to monitor those people so they could use it to facilitate expelling Julian Assange from the embassy. And this case right now, we have not seen a dismissal from the judge. It's extraordinary. Oftentimes, allegations of spying or criminality by the CIA, the NSA, the FBI, they usually can enter a court and just invoke national security or state secrets privilege and say that there's no way that this could be litigated. But the judge in the Southern District of New York is allowing them to continue with this lawsuit at the moment.
So not dismissing it. This lawsuit continues. And I think what the judge has pointed out here, or appears to be, by not dismissing it, is that there are allegations. These allegations need to be aired at trial. Like, you can't, a judge can't just rule on these allegations. He doesn't know the facts. He doesn't know all of the back and forth. So a judge can't just, you know, willy-nilly just dismiss this case. So this moves forward potentially to trial. And then, of course, we'll go through a discovery process. And hopefully we'll get to actually learn what the CIA was doing to these targeting of these Americans who were meeting with Julian Assange. And what do they allege? What do the plaintiffs allege in this case against Mike Pompeo and the CIA? What did they do to them when they went into the embassy that day?
They allege that by cooperating with this outfit called UC Global that was tasked with performing Ecuador's security, contractors were passing along, allegedly, these audio and video feeds to intelligence agencies in the U.S. and the CIA is believed to have had access. And so they could do constant monitoring of Julian Assange and every person that was being visited. What happened when you visited Julian Assange was that you would go to a security checkpoint. It would be unlike going into a courthouse. However, it was a little bit more like visiting somebody in prison because your belongings, your electronics, and other things were expected to be left with those security people. And then you would go into a room and you'd sit down and you'd meet with Julian Assange. Then when you'd come back, you'd get to pick up your property. What those individuals visiting Julian Assange did not know was that these contractors were making files on individuals who were considered priority targets. And in some cases, they were even taking apart their cell phones to take photographs of the physical structure of the phone so they could get something called an IMEI. It's an identification number that subscriber services use. It's highly invasive. Like, if they have that number, it can be used for tracking and following your movements, I presume, especially since they can link it to whatever mobile provider is providing you your service. And they also took pictures of passports. And that's key, because taking pictures of your passports means that now they know that you're an American. So if someone's coming to the embassy who is Russian, or is, let's say, from Israel, or is from the United Kingdom, or is from some other country, well, then it's okay for the intelligence agencies to monitor them. But as far as the Constitution goes at that point, they need to have some idea that this person is conspiring with Julian Assange, is plotting some kind of criminality when they enter that room with Julian Assange in order to target them outright, particularly if they're attorneys or journalists for a country that goes around as part of its image claiming that they support human rights and press freedom. Remember, this is a part of President Joe Biden's shtick and all the other officials under him. Well, to target those people, and then also for those officials under Donald Trump to do that, when again, many of these people use that as part of the U.S. image, we're supposed to be allegedly better than other countries, targeting Americans over in violation of their liberty. Well, that's something that during a trial is going to be argued over. And there's never been a case like this. I'll end my comment here by saying it's been acknowledged by the judge, the prosecutors, and the defense team, or I guess the people representing these individuals who were targeted. They're actually bringing a lawsuit, so they're not playing defense, but it feels like it because the CIA usually has the upper hand in these cases. But there's never been any case like this that you can point to in the history of the U.S. There are some cases that are similar that implicate NSA surveillance from over 10, 15 years ago, but there's nothing that involves people traveling abroad and being targeted in this manner at a diplomatic building.
Mike Pompeo, of course, one of the defendants in this case, which I find fascinating. Here's a guy that Stella Assange, of course, is very publicly pointed out has tried to assassinate Julian Assange, that Mike Pompeo, you know, set to target and kill Julian Assange as part of the CIA hit on him. So this is fascinating. What has there been any response from their side, from Pompeo's side, as to their defense in this?
Their side is to say that Julian Assange was a wanted fugitive. So once you entered the embassy, you should have known that he was a national security target. And when you met him, you should have known that probably the United States government was targeting him since he was a national security target. But I don't think that's how our rights work. I don't believe that if I happen to meet with somebody who's under a criminal investigation that I suddenly lose my right to freedoms, especially if the government can't prove that I'm engaged in some kind of crime or conspiracy with that individual. And at no point has the government suggested that these two attorneys or two journalists were involved in some kind of criminal conspiracy with Julian Assange. They're definitely not part of the case that's being pursued about against him, which, you know, just to be clear here in this interview, they are going after Julian Assange and have kept him in prison in a maximum security prison in London called Belmarsh for over 4 years because of the journalism that he engaged in back in 2010 and 2011. So they say no reasonable expectation of privacy, because that's the standard under the Fourth Amendment. And they weren't going to get a warrant. They claim they don't need a warrant for any surveillance of Americans that are going abroad. They basically say that if you didn't want to have your privacy violated, that you shouldn't have visited Julian Assange in the Ecuador embassy.
Yeah, it's an unbelievable precedent. So Americans have no expectation of privacy, that if they travel abroad, that, you know, an intelligence agency could swoop in and do whatever they want to them as they leave the United States. And it's not as if it's like Israeli intelligence. It's the United States intelligence doing it abroad in nefarious ways. How did these lawyers and journalists, when they came out of meeting with Assange, how do they know that their phones had been messed with? How do they discover that?
So many of these allegations come not from a U.S. media organization, which I think collectively the U.S. press has failed to follow up and investigate the way that people were treated who visited Julian Assange, and how Assange, his family, lawyers, etc., were targeted. This comes from a Spanish newspaper called El País, which was a partner with WikiLeaks in covering the documents. But they obtained many of these files. I understand that they got some of them from attorneys for Assange, because there were two whistleblowers from UC Global that had materials that they were able to provide. But there is a case that is being litigated in a Spanish criminal court right now against Pompeo and others who are implicated, the same group that we're talking about in this lawsuit in New York. And Julian Assange brought those claims, saying that his rights were violated. And that's running parallel to the extradition case in the United Kingdom right now, which has everyone's attention. And we're waiting on bated breath, wondering what's going to happen next. He could be extradited to the United States at any point in the first few months of 2024. And yet this could have ramifications for how the case against Julian Assange proceeds. Because if there's a ruling that there was a violation of privacy in that embassy, if there's more evidence brought out about the CIA-backed operation, that will be useful for Julian Assange's attorneys in that courtroom. And also, it's just worth noting, I don't think I'm suggesting that the judge is biased. I'm suggesting that he's fair-minded. But John Kodal is a remarkable individual because he has a backstory that includes a prior case involving WikiLeaks. One of the cases that he presided over was a case where the DNC, and particularly Chair Tom Perez, brought this lawsuit alleging that the Trump administration and WikiLeaks and Russian individuals were responsible for targeting the DNC when they published those emails, the Podesta emails or the Clinton campaign emails in 2016, and that they needed to be held accountable. And the judge determined that WikiLeaks had a right to publish hacked materials, and that it was journalism, and journalism similar to the tradition of publishing classified information that newspapers engage in routinely. And that was part of his dismissal of Tom Perez and the DNC's ludicrous claims that they were bringing in New York. So all of this matters, in my opinion, to the defense that Julian Assange will put on if he's brought to the United States and put on trial in the Eastern District of Virginia, just outside of DC.
I'll get you out of here on this, Kevin. Do you think that he's going to be extradited to the United States? And is this case against the CIA and Mike Pompeo perhaps the catalyst we need as champions of free speech and of journalism to have Julian Assange released from prison?
Let me just share a parallel history that I think is instructive to how things could go forward or should go forward. We know that when President Richard Nixon was in office and Henry Kissinger was part of that administration, that they were upset that Daniel Ellsberg came forward and released the Pentagon Papers. There was a break-in. They targeted his psychiatrist's office because they did not like that he was sharing a study about what the military was saying behind closed doors about how the military operations in Vietnam were actually failing. They were failing to defeat the enemies that they were going after in Vietnam. And that eventually sunk the Espionage Act case that was brought against Daniel Ellsberg. He said himself up to his death that he was not found innocent. He just barely escaped being convicted. He was spared because the judge found that there was wrongdoing by the government. And so he was able to walk free. And people who are supporters of Assange have seen parallels, including Ellsberg prior to his death, who said, this is the kind of wrongdoing that should lead the Justice Department to dismiss the case with prejudice, because you can't bring a fair trial against Julian Assange. The very people who Julian Assange exposed or who are found to have been targeting him because they were vindictive and wanted to see him prosecuted are the ones who are going to have their thumbs on the scale, tipping it so that they are able to get the outcome that they desire. I'll just close on this point. The reason why Pompeo and others at the CIA allegedly wanted to conduct this spying operation that ensnared these Americans that we were talking about is because there were these Vault 7 materials that were published in 2017 that exposed some of the ways that the CIA engages in cyber warfare, offensive or defensive capabilities that they have, countering powerful countries, let's say like China or Russia, et cetera, and what they can do to plant malware and how they could get into Apple devices and other technology. And they were embarrassed. It's alleged that Mike Pompeo felt he could not face Donald Trump because WikiLeaks had now happened to the CIA. And that's where the vengeful attitude came from. And that's why he wrote about WikiLeaks in his memoir. Mike Pompeo did, talking about how Julian Assange was a rapist because he raped America of this information. You know, very out there language, you know, very, very bombastic language. But that's why it is believable that they would go so far as to violate American civil liberties, and why it's important that the U.S. court step in and say that your rights don't end at the U.S. border. U.S. agencies should have to respect your privacy and civil liberties when you travel abroad.
Well said. Well, we'll be watching this very closely, and we expect some perhaps big movement on the Assange case and the extradition, as you mentioned, in the next few months. And again, I'll get you out of here on this. When do we expect a ruling on this motion to dismiss and whether or not this case in New York will move forward?
Well, we're up against the holidays, so probably in the first week or second week of January, which means it could be in the same window of time that we learn about the extradition against Julian Assange.
Hmm. Wow. 2024 is going to be the year of Julian Assange. And I think, yeah, we're going to see a lot of that. Kevin, great journalism on this. Thank you for being one of the lone voices in covering this story, one of the most important stories of our time. Thanks, Kevin.
Thank you.
So thanks so much, Kevin. And I encourage all of you to check out Kevin's website. We'll have it linked in the description. Check out his great book as well, which you can get on Kindle. You can get the paperback version. Please check that out. So thanks to Kevin for this. I think it's a bombshell story that we're going to watch here as the holidays on just after the holidays. What will happen to Julian Assange?
And you would think the mainstream media would have more curiosity about this story because it means more freedom for the press. But it seems the press doesn't really care about that. We do. We think not just for self-serving reasons, Julian Assange should be free, but also for just basic human rights. So thank you so much for that. We have a lot more to get to. Coming up, we're going to talk about this massive defense budget that just passed Congress. We're also going to talk about Dynext under attack and this new rule from Southwest Airlines, which will give plus-size passengers an entire row if they want to, if they need it, if they say that they can't put the armrest down. So get ready to debate that if you'd like. But first, we want to tell you about our friends over at Aura, because if you've ever Googled yourself or any information about your family and your friends, you might be shocked to see that your personal information is exposed on one of those public sites. In fact, if you're tired of receiving spam phone calls and you're like, how do they even know how to find me? Well, you know, because data brokers are making a fortune selling your information to websites, robocallers, spammers, and others who want to learn more about you, not just to learn where you live, but how to market to you, how to sell your information to others. That's why Aura can identify those data brokers exposing your info and submit opt-out results on your behalf. Brokers are legally required to remove your information if you ask them to, but they sure don't make it easy. So let Aura handle it for you. Aura is, of course, the sponsor of this show, and they do so much more than to protecting you and your family from online threats that you just can't see. It's super easy to set up. You don't have to download several different apps or get a VPN or a password manager. So let Aura do the hard work of keeping you safe online so you can operate with peace of mind when you're online. So go right now to aura.com/redacted to start your 2-week free trial. You'll be amazed at what they find and just 2 weeks. So, you know, let them know that you heard about them on Redacted. Head on over to aura.com/redacted for that 2-week free trial. All right. Well, it's no surprise that Congress approved the largest military budget ever and the largest in the world. It just keeps getting bigger and bigger. Every year on this show, we tell you we are shocked and scandalized by it, but it gets bigger anyway. The House passed it weeks ago, and now the Senate passed it for sure. President Biden will pass it. So let's just take a quick look at the numbers and see what made it in and what made it out. This is the 2024 defense budget. It totals $886 billion.
That's on paper, by the way. Like, yes. What's the hundreds of billions that they don't tell you about the off-the-books
right
information?
Good point. Right? This is 3% bigger from last year. And recall that the White House originally only asked for $842 billion. But Congress just tacked on a little more for Ukraine, plus an extra $37 billion to modernize U.S. nuclear capabilities. We're going to look at the nuclear bit a little bit closer. But let's just first put this in some context. China this year approved a 7.2% increase to their defense budget. But even with that increase, they're still only at $224 billion per year on military spending. How, you might ask, and I wonder this too, I don't have an answer to this question. How does the world's largest military with over 2 million enrolled members, how do they spend a quarter of what the U.S. spends? Just think about it. It's an existential question, if you will.
Well, when you have massively inflated prices and you have a private sector that literally charges through the nose for these weapons, when you have state manufacturing of weapons, it's a totally different animal.
Yes.
In your own country.
Right.
When you have state mobilization of your military, it's far cheaper. And, you know, it's going to cost, we're going to charge you $45 million for this aircraft.
Yeah.
In the United States.
Right. We've seen inflated prices for screws,
yeah,
for software updates, things like that. You're right. Even CBS News 60 Minutes covered that. Now, I want to show you this data. It comes from the Stockholm International Peace Research Institute, but some nice user laid it out in this graphic that I liked on Wikipedia. Almost all of the world's military spending comes from the West. The United States makes up a large portion of it, but here at the bottom it says other NATO, as if the United States is not also paying into that. So I would say
other NATO.
For the United States, we're paying for about 90% of everything you see there that is blue. And then look at the rest of the world. It's like this. Now, are we winning with all of that military spending? I leave that to you. So
winning what? Right? Like, what are we exactly winning?
Right.
Russia has literally beaten. Yeah, I guess profits. Yeah. They've literally beat NATO. I mean, all of NATO has funneled all of these weapons into Ukraine and Russia has beat all of them. So right. What exactly are they winning right now? It's a good question.
Right. Okay. So again, we told you about how China is increasing 7% and still keeping their numbers down. We're in debt. If we could just take the two shot here, we have this debt clock.
Yeah.
And so even with all of this debt, we are A-okay to increase our budget for a smaller military. Do those numbers make sense to you? Just, you know. Now, remember last year when we warned you that we could get close to a $1 trillion per year defense bill? We're almost there, right? Last year, we were absolutely scandalized that the budget was $847 billion, and that was $45 billion more than that administration had even asked. So here we go. They just keep magically saying, take more, we need it. Now, in July, when this spending package was proposed, we looked at some of the things that we thought, that's weird. Why is that in there? What's tucked into there? Now, back in July, the original HR 2670, which is the final military spending package, was 1,236 pages. The final bill that was voted on by the Senate, which will most likely be signed by the president, is twice that almost. It's 2,330 pages.
Senator Mike Lee tweeted a picture of this, them carting the giant bill into the Senate, into the Capitol building. They had to use a hand truck, massive hand truck, in order to push all of the boxes of this bill.
Yeah.
None of them are going to read this bill.
No.
None of them. Do you think President Biden is going to sit down and read a 2,330-page spending bill to decide whether or not he signs it? Of course he's not going to. And no. none of these senators are going to read it either.
Okay, but I had noted a few things back in July when we talked about it. So I wanted to go back and see what actually made it in there. So let's take a look. Heavy on the nuclear. We told you, remember, that they were going to add more to up the United States nuclear arsenal. In fact, they have made it such that there is a prohibition on the reduction of nuclear capabilities and ballistic missiles. I guess that's a double negative. It forbids the reduction, meaning we got to keep what we got and more, right? In July, we looked over this proposal that said that they wanted a Space National Guard. Well, this actually did not make it in there. This was like a National Guard, which is a reserve component of the military, only for space. It was not formally enacted in the final bill. It was commissioned to study. So far, no Space Force National Guard. Does that surprise you? Just research on the possibility of a reserve Space Force. Okay. A draft of the bill also had budget for quantum computing. You remember this? We discussed what that would mean, whether it would mean like space-time continuum or fun stuff like that. Well, this too was only commissioned as a research project. So it's not currently a military priority. The draft bill also said that no Defense Department can spend money on critical race theory or committees for the environment. That did make it into the bill. This is the final bill. It says the tenets of critical race theory are antithetical to the merit-based all-volunteer military that has served the country with great distinction for the last 50 years. Now, this is interesting, right? Because it seems like, remember we talked about the ads around the military that all of a sudden it's like we're kind of back and stronger and we're done with the bullshit.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I do see that reflected in this bill. For instance, the draft bill had something established called sex neutral physical standards, fitness standards. We showed you this. This was again in the draft. That did not make it in to this. So I don't know. Someone went in there and said, nope, we need to actually be strong. In fact, they have beefed up the language around fitness standards. What do you think of that? Here's what we have. It says that nothing in this section prohibits the Army from using combat fitness tests. I assume that that's probably pretty hardcore. I've never taken it. And in fact, it says down below that certain commanders can require higher standards
wow.
than what the Army already has. So are we getting back in shape? Is this what Clayton calls in superhero movies our training montage?
Maybe.
Where we're like, hey, no more critical race stuff, no more gender neutral fitness stuff. We got to stop this shit and be strong again.
Yeah, we've lowered our fitness standards for years.
Yeah.
We've allowed diversity and inclusivity and all of this stuff. And now it seems like they're going backwards on this, which is great. And wow, we can actually have physical fitness again in our United States military.
And so think of this. It says a commander can actually require more. Like the minimum push-ups is 100, but I'm not taking anyone into battle without 200. They can do that.
Good now, for them.
That's interesting.
But if they do that, they'll probably get fired. So they're probably going to just stick with the bare minimum. Because
it's written here. Why would they?
It's written there, but you know what the culture is like right now. The culture is such that if you push people in that way, you're not going to hit your recruitment standards.
Well,
if people keep failing through your recruitment standards, you keep John. We want to talk to you because we notice your outfit, your training. Yeah, we need 50 recruits, and you keep only passing 25. That's going to be a problem. We need to hit our recruitment goals. And you're too tough.
Perhaps.
I can see this happening, but maybe not. Maybe things will change.
Okay. I think that, you know, unless it's litigated, and do people often litigate failing out of the Army?
No, you can't. I mean, as far as I know, I don't think that's possible, but
right.
Yeah, they're protected.
Okay. Lastly, we had talked about the budget that was there to combat the fentanyl crisis. It does not, the new budget, hold any pharmaceutical companies accountable. Or say that we're breaking into their offices with armies. What it does say is that we are going to work with Mexico and Canada and monitor the southern border. So there is money for research and collaboration on the southern border. How much is that going to help? I don't know. It's basically work with them, come up with some plans. And finally, the bill specifically names the enemies it has their eyes on, a plan to mitigate disinformation from these two malign influence. It's Russia and China, as you can see there. There are many paragraphs about Russian interference in politics, despite the fact that the Justice Department debunked that in a special counsel just this year. We're still going after it. They want regular updates about maligned influence of Russia and China. Of course, we're not saying that this bill is unnecessary or that the military is superfluous or wasted energy. What we are saying is that this is clearly a rapid expansion of the military-industrial complex for a country that is increasing its debt ceiling so often. So you can read it for yourself. We link to it in the newsletter, the actual text, not the news about it. So if you have time to read 2,000 pages or you just have some things you're looking into, let me know in the chat what you think.
Yeah, 2,200 pages and $886 billion. Way to go, the United States. And sending billions to Ukraine and Israel while America's roads and bridges and infrastructure and southern border are pretty much wide open. So way to get your standards in place. And I'm sure President Biden will sign that. We've got more news to get to here on your Thursday. The area of Donetsk has been under attack over the past 72 hours. Patrick Lancaster is there. He's going to bring us a special report at the hospital there where civilians have been attacked once again. I'm using American-made HIMARS. So that's a surprise. It's being used, I guess, to target Russian forces? No, it's not. It's being used to hit civilian areas. So your U.S. tax dollars hard at work in Ukraine. We're also going to look at, too fat to fly. If you're very large, guess what? You'll get extra seats now on certain airlines. We'll tell you where that's happening. But first, recent events have made the entire economic environment more complex, especially factors such as the war, Fed rate hikes, now maybe Fed slashing rates over the next few months. That's great news. So it's very hard to predict what's happening in the economy right now. One thing, though, is for certain, it's still very expensive to live in the United States, and the cost of living has skyrocketed, and the cost of groceries and all of that. So what do you do with your money right now so that your U.S. dollars aren't being flattened by inflation? Well, one thing you can do is actually put it in a cash sweep account. Our friends over at Moomoo have just rolled out a brand new savings account. It's called their cash sweep account with a 5.1% APY. And it's federally backed by up to $1 million FDIC insured. So this is an account where your money sitting in cash can actually grow at 5.1% annualized return. And then if you want to use some of that cash to invest, you can do that all right inside of the Moomoo app. It's fantastic. So, you know, let's say you buy certain stocks and then you make a profit and then you sell them and your cash is sitting there in that account. Well, instead of it just sitting there earning nothing, now it can earn 5.1% interest. And plus, when you open your account, you'll get 15 free stocks when you sign up. Go to redacted.inc/moomoo today. That's redacted.inc/moomoo to get 15 free stocks when you sign up. And you get that 5.1% cash sweep account while your cash is just sitting there. So you can get those 15 free stocks and sell them and then put it right in that savings account. Totally up to you. Once again, it's redacted.inc/Moomoo. All right, well, the Russian city of Donetsk in former eastern Ukraine is once again under heavy attack by Ukrainian forces, targeting civilian infrastructure, residential buildings. In fact, a building in the heart of the city over the last few hours has been struck. This is the traffic center. This controls traffic lights. Like, that's a, you know, for civilians to be able to drive on roads. So a high value Russian target, apparently. But it's been hitting civilians. It's killed a number of civilians. And they've been doing this, of course, since 2014. Journalist Patrick Lancaster went to the hospital in Donetsk. He's back on the front lines. He spoke to doctors and victims and filed this special report for Redacted.
Hello, Redacted. I'm Patrick Lancaster, and right now we are back in the center of Donetsk. I've been gone from covering the situation here for a while, but now we're back because, unfortunately, in the last weeks, there's been a huge uptake of attacks by Ukrainian forces on Donetsk, particularly civilian areas in the center and across the city. And many civilians have been killed and injured. Now, this includes normal civilians, children, firefighters, journalists. Several journalists have been injured in attacks here in Donetsk in the recent times. And across Donbass and beyond, several killed, unfortunately. But right now, behind me, you see the main trauma hospital of Donetsk. And we're here. We're going to investigate what the situation is for the lucky ones, you could say, the lucky civilians who did not were not killed by this shelling by Ukrainian forces, that were just injured. We're going to see what their situation is, how many of them are injured. We're going to talk to the head doctors here on the ground and find out all the real information, because you're not going to see it anywhere in the Western mainstream media. You see it here. Because they won't show you what's really happening here on the ground in Donetsk. Only we will. So now we're going to head in and show you the real situation. There's a special report for Redacted. The new theme of the Ukrainian forces, it seems, is they will fire on a civilian area here in Donetsk. And then after first responders come, maybe sometimes for 15 minutes, half an hour, or an hour even later, they'll fire. Ukraine will fire on the same location and target the first responders. Now, in this, we can even hear the shelling right now. In this, three journalists at least have been injured. One minor has been killed just from these double taps, as they call it, which are war crimes. We're targeting first responders, and we can hear the shellers picking up today. Unfortunately, it seems like things are starting to pick up. It's actually been quiet for the last day because of the weather. So the targeting of civilians is against the Geneva Convention, specifically the targeting of these first responders. Now, there's been firefighters killed because of these double taps, journalists injured, civilians, children killed. I can't go on, but we're going to show you the facts we can from the people that live these tragedies.
Добрый день.
Можно представиться, спасибо.
Заместитель директора Республиканского травматологического центра по хирургической работе Анаприенко Вадим Игоревич.
Можно сказать, как обстановка?
Обстановка по-прежнему в Донецке стабильно напряженная. Город продолжает обстреливаться. Вчера был обстрелян Ленинский район города Донецка. В настоящее время у нас на госпитализации находится 19 гражданских, которые получили травмы в результате обстрела жилых кварталов Донецка. Из них 7 детей. То есть снаряды, как я уже говорил, они не щадят никого. Они не спрашивают ни пола, ни возрастов. Ну, к сожалению, у всех травмы тяжелые. Минно-взрывная травма, это осколочные ранения. Ну, то есть травмы характерные для характера повреждения.
И как прогнозы они?
Люди сейчас выздоравливают, идут на выздоровление, все больные прооперированы, всем оказана помощь необходимая, лечение люди получают в неполном объеме. Пациентам оказывается ургентная помощь, ну, так, когда вот они сразу поступают, то есть в ургентном отделе. Другим пациентам оказывается помощь плановая в плановых операционных.
И мы можно поговорить?
Да, конечно, сколько, конечно, да? Конечно, ага. Конечно.
Как вы думал, твое мнение, что нужно произошло сейчас за мирные люди хватит за мирный район Донецк хватит под обстрел? Что нужно?
Ну, я вам как могу сказать, конечно же, я не военный, вот, но дело в том, что, как я уже говорил, раньше обстреливались только прифронтовые районы города, это Петровский район, Куйбышевский, Кировский, Киевские районы, то сейчас обстреливается город весь абсолютно. То есть с появлением более мощного вооружения, более дальнобойной артиллерии, город обстреливается абсолютно весь. Вы знаете, что и территория нашего лечебного учреждения несколько раз подвергалась обстрелу. Как, например, 28 апреля было обстреляно наше лечебное учреждение. Чудом из пациентов никто не пострадал. Трое сотрудников получили ранения. Ну, в общем, как вам сказать, это либо, конечно же, все жители Донецка мечтают о том, чтобы эта война поскорее закончилась. И наши дети могли спокойно ходить, передвигаться по улице.
И а что вы думал, мирные люди на западной, может, Европе, США, что они должны знать, за что произошло в Донецке?
Вы знаете, мне кажется, что западному миру и США на нас глубоко наплевать. Это мое мнение.
Понял. Хорошо, спасибо большое.
Всего доброго, до свидания.
Меня зовут Патрик.
Лена.
Очень приятно, а вы?
Александр.
Можно поговорить, да?
Да.
Что произошло?
Мы пострадали от взрыва колокольчика, кассетной бомбы, как
да?
Это называется.
Когда и где?
5 октября в городе Горловка обстреливался район Румянцево, и там были разбросаны колокольчики. Наш мальчик был в гостях.
Ага. И как обстановка сейчас?
Сейчас лучше. Врачи стараются, все делают лучше. Он был у нас в тяжелом состоянии, у нас и брюшная полость, он вся перерезана. Мы с хирургии приехали сразу лечить руки.
So это был кассетный шарик?
Да. Дети пострадали, там мальчик один погиб.
А, не только он? И понимаю, что это кассетный, это... какое оружие, не знаю? Просто...
Они попадали, их там много было. Они там помогали, показывали, где оно что лежит.
Понял.
Где-то нервы у мальчика в руках. Тот, что погиб.
Можно поговорить
с ним, да? Конечно, задавайте вопросы.
Здравствуйте, еще раз. Можно сказать, как этот момент был?
Ну, мы сидели. Получается, мы играли в карты, а мой друг его, получается, взял в этот момент, начал записывать уже в кружок в соцсеть, и в этот момент он запался.
И это твой друг, это который погибший?
Это который погиб, да.
Знаю он долго?
Знал его долго, я с ним с детства знаком был.
Можно военный, есть военный объект возле твоего дома?
Ну, вообще нет.
Ну, почему, как ты думал, почему украинские войска стреляют на твой район?
Без понятия.
Как ты думал, кто стреляет там?
Украина.
И почему ты думал это?
Они всегда по мирным жителям у нас стреляют. Если два, как точки объекта, да, все по окраинам. Где-то есть, может, посреди районов, да, допустим, объекты какие-то, но они не стреляют в эти объекты, они стреляют там, где дети и мы живем. Но... Вот в том году у нас прям под квартиру прилетело, 9-й этаж.
Может, они думали, твой район есть военный
нет,
объект?
Нет, у нас нет. Вот Горловка, 5-й квартал, но именно у нас район, там нет.
Вообще не рядом.
Нет.
Угу. Здравствуйте.
Здравствуйте.
Ага. Что произошло?
Ну, мы шли, услышали взрыв, выстрел со свистом, и прилетел нам под ноги снаряд.
Угу. И где это был?
Где я был? На улице мы с друзьями гуляли.
Не,
Пролетарский район.
Ага, ага.
Ну, там, получается... Получил он минно-взрывные травмы руки правой, обеих ног. Это сейчас мы длительное время находимся уже на лечении здесь. Ну, периодически домой. Ну, открой, покажи, что осталось. У нас было... Это демонтировали сейчас аппарат со стопы. А с этой ногой, ну, вот было вверху тоже там все разорванное, осколочное.
Понял. Откуда это был стреляет?
Ну, я думаю, скорее всего, наверное, все-таки против нас воюют сейчас украинцы, кто там, поляки. В общем, вся Европа против России воюет вместе с американцами. И вот они наших детей, наших людей и всех, помимо что военные гибнут, их молодые и старые хлопцы. Плюс еще они колпашат детей и мирное население. Это люди, ну, детки просто, как обычно, вышли в пролетарском районе на улице Липецкой. И шли на тебе. Вам всего доброго.
Удачи.
До свидания.
All right, so you see a little bit of just the results of what's happening here in Donetsk. We're going to keep moving on. So we moved to the adult department, and we've got to respect their wishes, and the injured people don't feel like talking on camera. And it could be many reasons. Maybe they have family on the other side, maybe they're scared, and maybe they're just feeling bad. But we respect everyone we can during all the reports, as we always do. This is a special report for Redacted. We've got a lot more coming. And remember, you can see extended reports on my YouTube channel, Patrick Lancaster.
All right. Thanks so much, Patrick. We really appreciate it. And Patrick is filing another report for us as we speak right now on a separate HIMARS attack that has just unfolded. And we'll bring that breaking news to you as soon as we have it. So thank you, Patrick, for his bravery and for his coverage there. In Russia. Yeah, it's absolutely frigid. Well, we got reports too. It's negative 11 degrees right now.
In Moscow. And, yeah. And it's, well, that's Celsius, right?
Yeah, negative 11 degrees Celsius right now. So awful for those individuals. All right.
All right. Well, we're going to talk about this now. Southwest Airlines will offer an entire row to plus size flyers according to the company's customer of size policy.
A whole row.
Yes. So we've been talking about this a lot lately, how there was a plus size blogger, her name's Jalen Cheney, who's launched this petition to demand that plus size people get an extra seat for free. She also still wants bigger aisles and bigger bathrooms. She hasn't got to this one yet, but Southwest Airlines did succumb to this policy. They said, yeah, okay, we'll do that. Their new policy says that plus size passengers can purchase one seat and get the adjacent seat for free. And there's specific ways that you do this. You either can buy two seats or you get there and you get a pass for the second seat. But the airline says that they'll be flexible so that if an extra plus size person needs the seat next to them and the seat next to that, or maybe one on either side, they can accommodate that, which would mean the entire row. They are the only airline to have a policy like this. Now, take a look at this customer of size policy. Very little at the bottom. It says that they will honor this even if the flight oversells.
Whoa, wait a second. So if okay, we're going away for the holidays, our whole family is there, we got three kids, five of us, the flight is oversold, then they will, what that means is they will kick people off
the
flight.
They will kick paying customers off to honor this extra seat policy.
And what they'll do is they'll first ask, they'll make an announcement.
Yeah.
We've all seen it, right? They'll make an announcement over the loudspeaker. Hi, this flight is oversold. We're going to give a free voucher for anyone who would like to take a later flight.
Yes.
Or tomorrow. You can come back to the airport tomorrow and we'll pay you a voucher. We'll give you a voucher and a, like $100 bonus or something like that, whatever, to come back tomorrow. We'll kick you off. If anyone, any takers? And usually no, because people are traveling. They need to go someplace for on purpose. And then if they don't have any takers, then they start going through and kicking people off the flight.
Yes, they will. And so the people, you know, the way Southwest boards is you don't reserve a seat. It's sort of like cattle, A, B, and C. So it's either C people didn't get on, you didn't get a seat, you got to go, right? And the thing is about this extra seat is that you get priority boarding or you have to ask for it because you are a person with extra medical needs. And so an extra plus size person will board first, put their pass down on that seat and it can't fill up. So if you're a paying customer who just happened to get a C because you were A, B, and C, you're not going to get on. And one thing, though, they say they don't force people out of their seats. So if you don't board early and there's not an extra seat for you, you're kind of out of luck. So you have to board early and do that this seat is taken bit or put that pass down on it. They say anyone can qualify as long as their body precludes them from putting the armrest down. So as you know, I can't go there and say I'd like an extra seat just because I want to. I'm feeling kind of bloated today. Doesn't work. You have to actually not be able to.
Do they put you, you know how they test your luggage in those like metal cart things?
They're
like,
should.
Hey, will your luggage fit in this thing? And then if not, sorry. So they have you sit in like some sort of a fat container.
And then see if it goes down.
Like, all right,
or not.
Come on. You got to go over here and sit in the fat seat. And if the arm thing doesn't come down, then you get a free seat.
I guess that's only fair, right? They weigh the dog. The dog has to be under 9 kilos.
Like if you want a free seat and you want a whole row, you got to sit in the fat seat and we got to see if you're legitimately, you know, going to spill over into the other aisle.
Right. Now, this blogger, Jaylen Chaney, who is at the forefront of this movement.
When you say blogger, she's a TikToker.
TikToker.
Yeah.
We'll call her that. Has admitted that retrofitting for larger people and giving them extra space will drive costs up for everyone. But given that no U.S. state has an obesity rate under 25%, I guess she thinks that's worth it because there are enough overweight people to drive up the costs for the rest non-overweight people. Now, remember, we showed you this video of her demands for hotels to follow suit and retrofit.
We deserve an environment that respects our needs and body diversity. These are the exact steps that hotels can take to be more size inclusive and accessible for travelers of all sizes. Number one on the list, provide sturdy, wider chairs without armrests. In guest rooms, lobbies, and common areas to accommodate different body sizes and types. Number two on the list, ensure beds with strong support and a higher weight capacity, along with providing reinforced chairs and wider bathroom facilities. Number three, make elevators and hallways spacious to allow for easy movement of larger individuals and those utilizing mobility devices. Number four, install grab bars in showers and near toilets. Offer adjustable handheld shower heads and raised toilet seats for added accessibility. Number five, train staff to be respectful, understanding, and accommodating to travelers of all sizes. Number six, provide pool lifts and handrails at the entry of the pool. This will allow for plus-size guests and guests with different abilities to enjoy all amenities. Number seven, hotel restaurants should have roomy seating options and sturdy chairs, ensuring that everybody can dine comfortably. Number eight, offer larger beach and pool seating. Provide oversized loungers and seating at the beach and pool areas, allowing travelers of all sizes and abilities to be comfortable. Number nine, hotels should provide size-inclusive bathrobes. These should go up to a size 6X and beyond. And hotels should also provide bath sheets or plus-size friendly towels so that travelers of all sizes and abilities can use them comfortably. And last but not least, this is an important one. Display clear and accurate information on these amenities on hotel websites. Include weight limits, seat dimensions, and things like that. And include information on the size-inclusive amenities available. This will help plus-size travelers make informed decisions. By implementing these size-inclusive hotel amenities, hotels can become more inclusive and accommodating. Be sure to hit that follow button for more plus-size travel tips and share this with someone.
What she's advocating here is a total reordering of society for just this group. Clearly.
Right. She wants these companies to spend millions upon millions of dollars to retrofit their businesses because she overeats.
Right. Well, that's the way you want to cover this, yes. And the way that CNN covered this when this story became part of the conversation earlier this year is with this human rights, as a human rights issue, with this expert saying, well, I'd be concerned to see this type of argument being advanced where immutable characteristics of a person are being used for assessing fees. Whereas, should she pay extra because she has a larger body? And he's saying, yeah, she should. She should not have to pay extra because this is an immutable characteristic. What he's saying is being overweight is immutable. That is false. Being overweight is mutable. Obesity is not a disease. A disease is a cellular malfunction. Obesity is an addiction that causes disease. It's linked to every type of cancer known to man, diabetes, and which is now known to be linked to Alzheimer's. So this narrative is that obesity is immutable, but biological sex is mutable. Get the heck out of here with that. Now, the major problem with this is not just about being insensitive or mean to fat people, which I never want to do. It's about the expanding powers of the medicine arm of the state. This is what Thomas Sasse, author of Pharmacocy, has been warning about since the 60s. He says alcoholism, obesity, suicide, and violence, they say, are killing Americans. Individuals are not responsible for eating or drinking too much, for killing themselves or others. It's a rejection of personal responsibility for one behavior or another. It drives the politics of therapy. Right? The government declares a war on drugs, cancer, heart disease, obesity, mental illness, poverty, racism, sexism, suicide, and violence. However, drug addicts refuse to abstain from drugs. The obese overeat. The mentally sick reject being treated. Coping with these and other health emergencies requires enlarging the scope and coercive powers of medicine as an arm of the state, which actually has happened. And we've seen it happen since the pandemic. Not only does this expand the government's medicine state, but it erodes your freedom. Also, it leads to a divisive society because people who are not a part of this protective group say, well, how come I don't get those privileges? For me, especially, who's traveled a lot with a lap infant, I think, well, why don't I get an extra seat for my baby? That's extra weight. It's an extra person. And it's hard to fit in between those two armrests with a tiny baby. Why don't I get a free extra seat for that? I don't. Here are some other responses saying, well, this guy says, I'm 6'6". They never offered me an extra seat because I don't fit. She says, you need to pay. He says, you need to pay.
Yeah, I would love to lay down. I'm 6'2". I'm not 6'6". Holy smokes. And I would like to, you know, on an overnight flight, instead of, you know, paying for like the business class or the first class stuff or whatever, yeah, I'd like a whole row as a bed.
Well, Clayton, for sure your legs don't fit, right? And so if we're talking about fit, if you, it's one
thing. Every time I'm sitting there, somebody in front puts that tray table down or slides back or like wants to relax, recline 5 inches, my knees, it smashes my knees.
Right.
And I have to put my legs like out in the aisle where then the drink cart comes by and smashes my knee. So
but if you
I don't
want
fit.
If you want the seat with extra leg room, you do have
to pay. Yeah, I have to pay for it if I want the extra leg room.
So you have to pay this way, but you don't this way.
Right. So then just I'll get a free row from now on. I'll claim the fat tax and I'll just turn sideways and I'll just take up a whole row and lay back and get a pillow.
Clayton would do it too because he likes that kind of confrontation. And finally, here is this woman named Proud Patriot saying glamorizing obesity is not a good look. Southwest Air. You know, one thing that Stuart Varney on Fox said about this is that it's creating this whole new industry that is a lawyer's charter because everyone's going to want to sue over this, called obesity discrimination. You're going to see this playing out in courts all over the place. In fact, Colorado, which doesn't have has the lowest obesity rate in the state in the country, is now saying, well, we're going to create laws around to prevent obesity discrimination. It's just going to create lawsuits and not actually prevent any obesity discrimination. Here is, we're going to leave the last word with this woman, Daisy Duke of Bama, it's Alabama, asking for a discount if she doesn't need an extra seat.
So I see where Southwest Airlines is now offering seating to obese and or person of size, a plane ticket, and giving them an additional seat for the same price. So my question is, all this is great and wonderful, people of size, but am I going to get a discount for being a normal BMI? For being a healthy person? Do I get a discount for not taking up 2 or 3 seats on an airline? On an airline. You can't fit in a seat on an airline, and you're going to pay the same price that I'm going to pay for a plane ticket. Am I going to get a discount for not eating your crappy plane food and your crappy peanuts and drinking your alcohol and all your fruit juices and stuff? When do we get a discount for being healthy? When do the healthy people get rewarded for not being people of whatever? Because I personally would like to see some rewards for not eating my way into 2 plane seats. Thank you.
All right, let us know what your thoughts are on this in the comments below. Should companies be making these kind of a fat accommodations? Let us know your thoughts on this in the comments below. We've got more news to get to. We're going to look at the Trudeau administration slashing jobs basically at the Canadian Broadcasting Company, Trudeau's favorite television station. Why, by the way, do they have so many employees when what they cover is liberal trash? We'll cover that part. But first, it's no secret right now. If you're tuned in, you know experts are predicting a recession heading our way in just a few weeks right after the Christmas holiday. The Q1, a number of major economists have said, we are facing a massive recession. What it will look like, we don't know. No one can actually predict it, but just look at what Warren Buffett is doing right now, selling billions of stocks right now. So it could be really bad. We're hoping it's not, but nevertheless, why do you want to give your family's future over to the volatility of this craziness with the U.S. dollar and inflation? A portion of our savings absolutely should be in precious metals. Natalie and I invest in gold and silver and real estate. It's a absolutely a great hedge against inflation. Anybody who is a smart investor has at least a portion of their portfolio in these things, precious metals, real estate, etc. And our friends over at Lear Capital can help you get set up and do this. By going to LearRedacted.com, you can get a $15,000 in free bonus metals with a qualified purchase, and you can get your free precious metals guide just for going to the website and checking it out to see if it's a good fit for you, how you can buy gold and silver. Lear Capital can actually do that and ship gold coins and silver coins and silver bars and gold bars all right to your house, or you can actually have it housed off-site in a storage facility that's protected. They can help you do either of those things. And if you've got an old IRA or an old 401k sitting around, you can actually convert that to a gold-backed IRA that lets you invest in precious metals and real estate and other things like that. They'll help you do that very quickly on the phone. So call them today, 1-800-613-3557 for your free guide, or go to LearRedacted.com. Once again, 1-800-613-3557. Well, this week, Justin Trudeau's favorite television station, the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation, the CBC, announced a massive round of layoffs, job cuts, budget cuts. It's bleeding money. It's losing money every day that it's on the air. Conservatives have for decades been calling for the end, the defunding of the CBC in Canada. Will it finally happen? Will they actually defund this thing and close it? Finally put this horse out of its misery? Let's ask David Creighton from Ottawa, Canada. David, the CBC has been sort of a whipping boy for many, many years, and conservatives have promised to defund this. I know this going back many, many decades. They've been promising, just like PBS in the United States. Why are taxpayers funding this propaganda? But now it looks like they're almost putting themselves out of business. What's happening with the CBC?
There's so much happening right now with the CBC. And as for it being Justin's favorite channel, I think his YouTube station is probably his favorite channel because nobody's watching it. But that's a story for another day. But CBC gets $1.3 billion every year in taxpayer funding. It's been getting that for decades, over $1 billion. It just announced a week or so ago that it's going to cut 600 jobs, and it's got more planned cuts in the next year. Now, people are saying, how is it possible for a news station that gets that much government funding to have to lay off 600 positions? And unlike PBS, If you watch CBC on television, they have paid commercials. They don't offer commercial-free television. They never have. The radio service, yeah. But once again, that's nobody's listening to radio anymore. So it's no argument. There is no argument for the cuts they're doing and to continue giving it over $1 billion a year. And that's really what the crux of this is. And the new president of CBC, who is an appointee of Justin Trudeau, had the gall to suggest, yeah, I'm going to cut 600 jobs, but those Christmas bonuses for the executives, not going to say we're going to cut those because we're so important. So Catherine Tate has become the image. She's become emblematic, if you will, of how elitist, how distant, how detached the CBC has become from ordinary Canadians. And she's a gift to conservative leader Pierre Poilievre, who has been promising now for about 2 years that if and when he becomes prime minister, he will defund CBC. And he's even joked about its headquarters here in Ottawa being low-income housing in the future, because that he is certain, I think, to finally come through on a long-held promise from many conservative leaders. Stephen Harper mused about it. Brian Mulroney mused about it, but not very seriously. But I think Poilievre is the guy who's going to do it. And I think Catherine Tate has made it irresistible because she has personified how elitist this news organization is.
I'm struck by how in the world, first of all, you even have 600 news employees for this organization. I mean, we here at Redacted have, you know, under, I can count them on one hand, you know, our team here. And it's remarkable the news coverage that the CBC provides. So you would think that with that amount of coverage, with that amount of access to the Trudeau government, not having to register as a state-run company, as a state-run media, that they have full access to YouTube, they have full access to Twitter, they're being blanketed and pushed out all over the place, that their numbers would be through the roof, that every Canadian, when they first wake up in the morning, before you even put on your pants in the morning, you're required to read the CBC. I would think that it would be a massive part of your life. But it turns out, I guess, people aren't really watching or reading what the CBC puts out. And in fact, I was stunned by some of their coverage over the past year, looking at their coverage of euthanasia, actively promoting the euthanasia program, the maid program, the medical assistance in dying. The CBC has done very flattering pieces about euthanasia and the MAID program. So I'm surprised that all Canadians aren't reading it first thing in the morning, David.
Well, I actually read the CBC this morning before coming on because I wanted to see what they were talking about as of right now, today. And there it was, a hit piece on Elon Musk, a hit piece on X, formerly known as Twitter, and how horrible it is that Alex Jones has a platform again. This is just awful because censorship is a good thing, didn't you know? And it's a bad thing to have discourse and diversity and discussion on social media. And Elon Musk is just horrible, man. He's anti-Semitic and he's actually supporting white supremacy and blather, blather, blather. And this, of course, is the sort of nonsense you get. And the author of this article I read actually makes the outrageous remark that people like Alex Jones were deplatformed, and of course Donald Trump was as well, because they violated community standards. Now, what the hell does that mean? I have no idea. They don't either. Community standards are whatever Twitter in those days decided it was. It's whatever Facebook decides it is today. And it's like misinformation, disinformation to the Trudeau government. It's whatever they decide today. So, and you made the remark about how do you fire 600 employees? What are all these people doing in the first place? Well, when I was in the Air Force, I invited news media to my base to cover operations. I could always tell when CBC was at the main gate because they had four people. Literally, they would arrive for a news story with four people, one of them just with a bag of bagels. And I joked about it one time. I said, what's he doing? And the lead reporter, who's still with CBC today, actually, said, oh, he's the guy with the bagels. And I said, you're kidding. No. That's how the organization works. The top dollar I mean, you'll get never get paid more as a journalist than you do at CBC, but it's even worse for the executives up to the president level. They're getting huge government salaries. And are they doing anything in return for that? Are they fulfilling the mandate of CBC, which was in 1935, when the corporation was created, it was to provide Canadian content because we were engulfed by U.S. entertainment, U.S. news, and still had links to the United Kingdom. So we needed Canadian news created by a Canadian news agency. That mandate disappeared decades ago. I mean, there is so much Canadian content on cable news, on the cable network, on YouTube. A lot of people are providing Canadian content. I provide Canadian content. So what are they doing? As I argued in a paper quite some time ago, if they're so good, if they're such a dynamic, wonderful news organization, why do they need to be subsidized to the tune of $1.3 billion? Can't they make it on their own like other people have to? Clearly, they're going to have to make some cuts at the top when they're defunded, if they continue to operate at all as a news organization. They're going to have to get realistic with the salaries they give out to their top executives and maybe not assign four reporters to a story every time they go out, because it's just not feasible anymore. And I think the reality has to set in.
Well, and I think most Canadians are probably waking up. They're not getting their news from the CBC anymore. The CBC, which pushed, you know, was very anti-trucker convoy, which was pushing mandates, which was pushing pro-vaccine, pro-mask wearing, pro-euthanasia. It's a wonder that people aren't tuning in and they're bleeding so much in their budget, where people aren't tuning in and giving them the page views that they deserve. Well, we'll see. We'll see if they actually manage to cut them this time, if conservatives can pull it off. But it is disgusting. 600 people are going to lose their jobs while these executives are going to get nice bonuses for Christmas. That's the way it works in politics. David Creighton, thank you so much. And I think we need to, Redacted needs to hire a bagel person. Maybe that's what we need. Maybe that's what we're missing. We need to get a bagel person. So if that guy loses his job at CBC, we're hiring a bagel person.
It's unfortunate that the Trudeau government is going the other way with subsidizing news organizations. They not only continue to fund the CBC, but they subsidize all the legacy media in this country. So it's insane. It's not only a waste of taxpayer dollars, it's buying off reporters. And that's what state media is all about. So that's the other reason we've got to defund the CBC and stop the subsidies for legacy media.
Right. And censoring independent media in Canada. So censoring independent voices, censoring independent media, and funding the state-run media. That's not how a democracy works. David Creighton, great to see you. Thank you so much, as always. We really appreciate it.
Thank you so much, Clayton.
Thanks, David. Great to see you, as always. How many of you
are
actually watching?
That's my new job title. I was going to say, that's my new job title here at Redacted, is I'm the bagel getter. That's what I'm doing from now on. Right. So you guys have to find out. I'll even run some up to Montreal.
I would love that. Please send us some bagels. Yes, that'll be your job. In not only being technical director of the show, but also buying bagels. So that's a job post at the CBC. That's how they're spending so much money up there at the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation. So thanks to David. Thanks to all of you for a great week. We really appreciate it. We had an amazing week here. We had Tucker on the show. We had a lot of great guests this week on Redacted. So great to share that all with you. Please check out our store. If you're interested, by the way, in supporting independent journalism, head on over to redactedstore.com. Right for the holidays, because a lot of you have been buying. Actually, our number one seller right now is the mugs is this one. Friends don't let friends watch mainstream media. So pick up that mug for the holidays. A bunch of people just bought the non-pacifist peace extremist shirt, as well as our I Will Not Comply hoodies and t-shirts as well. So pick them up right now. Go to redactedstore.com, a perfect gift to put under the tree. For all of you Redacted fans out there, we really appreciate it. We don't mark the prices up at all. We keep them very close to at cost, and those prices are going to go up after the holidays. So take advantage of these low prices on these things right now with the bumper stickers and everything else. Go to redactedstore.com. Thank you guys so much for that. And thank you guys for a great week. We really appreciate you joining us here. Thank you for subscribing, and we'll be back here on Monday at 4 p.m. Eastern time. We hope you have a wonderful weekend, everyone.
Bye then.
Bye.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3-bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort-style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.